Welcome to Louis Pasteur's house. It's here that Pasteur spent a good part of his life during the 19th century. Louis Pasteur was born in Dole in 1822. He came to live in Arbois with his family when he was 8 years old. This was when his father, who was a tanner, bought his own tannery. This is the original house. Pasteur spent his childhood and adolescence here. After his father's death, the property became his. At that time, Pasteur was already a university professor, and it was not possible for him to continue the tanning business. He therefore altered and redesigned the tannery to become a comfortable, attractive home, where every year he spent his summer holidays. This is the only house Pasteur ever owned. All his other accommodation in Strasbourg, Lille, and Paris was in the form of official residences. The ground floor, the entrance hall. In this house, all interior decorations chosen by Louis Pasteur himself, from the furniture, rugs, and stained glass to the wallpaper, have been conserved. Everything is therefore quite precious. This is why all visits are supervised. The taking of pictures, sitting in the chairs, touching of furniture and wallpaper is not allowed. These measures are necessary in order to keep these installations and the house preserved for posterity. This room served as the reception area. When Louis Pasteur spent his summers here, many visitors came to seek his counsel and to ask for advice concerning their research careers in Paris. And the winemakers of the region too were very interested in Louis Pasteur's work on the development and the production of wine. Pasteur is considered to be the founding father of oenology. People generally thought that he was a medical doctor. This was not so. He had never studied medicine. He was a researcher, university professor, and chemist, and he was the founder of the science of microbiology. He never practiced as a medical doctor. On the table in this room, you see a fossil, an ammonite, and a vine rootstock, which both originate from Pasteur's vineyard. His vines allowed Louis Pasteur to do his research on fermentation. They are worked and harvested to this day in the neighbouring village of Montigny-lès-Arxures by the winemakers Henri Maire of Arbois. Both the vineyard and the house have been the property of the Academy of Sciences since 1991. On the wall you see a bust presented by J.C. Jacobsen, the founder of the Danish brewery Carlsberg. Christian Jacobsen made his fortune thanks to Louis Pasteur's advice on the procedure for the fermentation of beer. Carlsberg today continues to be a leader of the European beer market. On the chest to your right, you see a picture of Louis Pasteur's grandson, Valery Radeau, the last descendant of the family. In 1935, he donated his grandfather's house to the state. He died in 1970 and is buried in the old cemetery in Arbois. Further back, you see a gong given to Pasteur by his nephew, Adrien Loire, who worked as his assistant in the laboratory. Louis Pasteur placed it here himself as decoration. Exotic objects were the fashion at this period. Often, however, the family made use of the gong to summon the scientist when he turned a deaf ear while working in his lab. We will now continue our visit from room to room up to the laboratory. The next room is the salon. The salon. This living area is a much more intimate and comfortable room. The carpet is pure wool. Pasteur bought his French billiard table in Paris. This is a billiard game played with three balls. With the red ball, you have to touch the two others. The game was known as carom billiards. The table has no pockets. The game of billiards was very popular among the upper middle classes and was thought of mainly as a game for gentlemen, although at times it seems Madame Pasteur joined in the fray with her husband. Above the billiard table, Pasteur installed a Dutch gas lamp. There are buttons to open the gas flow, and the hats above serve to catch the smoke before it blackened the ceiling. The piano belonged to Pasteur's wife, Marie Laurent, whose portrait you can see above and to the right of the mirror. She was the daughter of the rector of the Academy of Strasbourg and had received, as it befitted a young woman from a good bourgeois family, a traditional education, including activities such as sewing, needlepoint, piano, and the art of conversation. Below the portrait of Marie Laurent, you find a portrait of her granddaughter, Camille Valérie Arado. Louis and Marie Pasteur's was a marriage of love. They had 5 children, of whom 3 died at an early age, 2 of typhoid and 1 of a liver tumour. Their son, Baptiste, became a diplomat, married but stayed childless. The daughter, Marie-Louise, called Zizi by her father, married the journalist René Valérie Radeau. They had 3 children, Camille, Louis, and Marie-Madeleine, who died soon after birth of an early postnatal infection. On the wall you see a plate with the coat of arms of the town of Arbois, representing a pelican piercing her body to feed her young. The motto, "I do this for the ones I love." An oil painting by Émile Isambard describes the story of Jean-Baptiste Juppy. Juppy was the 2nd child saved by the vaccine against rabies, which was developed by Pasteur in 1885. He is seen here killing the rabid dog with his clog in order to save the children you can see in the background. Having been bitten by the dog, it was clear that his life was in peril. However, death wasn't going to be immediate. After the introduction via the saliva of the rabid dog, the virus stays in the body of the infected person and migrates to the brain. This period of incubation lasts on average 30 days, depending on the size and resistance of the infected person. But once the illness declares itself, the victim is unable to swallow, salivates, and becomes either depressive or aggressive. Therefore, the general procedure, up to and during the 19th century, was to tie the sick person to a bed and wait for him to die. Juppy travelled to Paris, went to the laboratory of Louis Pasteur at the École Normale Supérieure, was immunised and survived. His rescue was widely reported in the newspapers, as was the rescue of the 1st child to have received the vaccine, Joseph Meister, in July of the same year. He was 9 and came from Alsace, which was under German rule at the time. Joseph Meister's salvation was hailed as an act of patriotism at a time when the French were traumatized by the loss of Alsace and Lorraine. From 1885 onwards, Louis Pasteur was world famous and became a legend in France. Some call him the people's saint of the Third Republic. Others compared him to St. Michael. Since 1924, there have been no more deaths through rabies in France. That is to say, no one has contracted rabies on French territory. However, between 1977 and 2008, 19 people died in France through infection acquired in other countries. Worldwide, rabies still kills between 40 to 50,000 people each year, of whom 40% are children. Rabies infects dogs, bats, and foxes. Vulpine rabies, transmitted by foxes, is treated by oral vaccine in France according to the method of Brochier involving the dropping of bait by helicopter. In France, some 4,000 people receive treatment each year, generally 6 injections over a period of 28 days. The virus, however, like all viruses, can evolve and could develop into a newly emerging disease. The dining room. Note the linoleum floor, chosen and installed by Pasteur himself, at that time considered to be the latest and most hygienic of floor coverings. This room is fitted with an Alsatian stove, also known as a Prussian chimney. It is a wood oven which has 2 openings to distribute the hot air, and above it there is a plate warming shelf, very useful since the kitchen of Pasteur's household was downstairs in the old tannery part of the house. To get to the kitchen, the servants had to walk through the garden. There were no interior stairs. Instead, there was a dumbwaiter, a small internal lift, which simplified the service. The crockery comes from Nant-sous-Sainte-Anne in the region, and the plate above from Strasbourg. The bottles remind us of Pasteur's research on wine. In 1860, Napoleon III asked Pasteur for help. He had conducted a trade agreement with the Briton of Queen Victoria, hoping to give French winemakers a chance to conquer the British market. The wines, however, suffered during the journey and on arrival had turned sour. The winemakers had no idea about fermentation and were unable to control the wine's development. Louis Pasteur showed that fermentation, as well as bad quality in the wine, is influenced by microorganisms. He showed that these microorganisms are sensitive to heat. So, in order to improve the conservation of the wine, he suggested heating it to 55 degrees centigrade for 1 minute. This procedure was patented in 1865 and called pasteurization. Pasteurization was initially invented to conserve wine, but was later used on beer, milk, and milk produce. This invention was made here in Arbois. The procedure is a clever compromise. It kills the microorganisms, which are the cause of the degradation of the product, but keeps the taste intact. Therefore, the temperature has to be adapted to the product, 55 to 60 degrees centigrade for wine, 70 to 80 degrees centigrade for milk and fruit juices. Pasteurization is thus different from the sterilization of milk through the UHT process, which enables the milk to be kept in cartons for several months, but which denatures the protein and changes the taste. Pasteurization kills pathogenic bacteria as well as those responsible for food degradation. It's followed by rapid cooling in order to minimize the temperature bracket of 30 to 40 degrees centigrade when bacterial proliferation is at its most effective. On the wall, you see a plate signed by Max Claudet, a friend of Pasteur and also of the painter Gustave Courbet. The plate represents the Porte Noire in the town of Besançon, where Louis Pasteur prepared for his 2 baccalaureats, one literary and the other scientific. Above the stove is a cuckoo clock, a reminder of the scientist's admiration for his fellow German scientists. There is one discovery by Pasteur which is not mentioned often, but which is considered by today's scientists to be his most important and far-reaching, and which touches on the essence of life. The next bit of this commentary is a little bit technical, so take a deep breath. In 1848, Pasteur was studying the effects of tartaric acid, which is present in wine, and discovered, looking through a microscope, that there are two types of tartrate crystals, which are mirror images of each other, in the way the right hand is a mirror of the left hand. These images cannot be superimposed. This is called chirality, or handedness. Pasteur separated the two types of crystal manually with tweezers, and using a light prism, noticed that they rotated the plane of polarization in opposite directions, some to the left, others to the right. Pasteur recognized that organic compounds of living things are asymmetric, and he realized that this had to do with the spatial arrangement of the molecule, the existence of which was known through the work of the English scientist John Dalton. Pasteur recognized that molecules of living organisms have unique chirality or handedness. For example, all amino acids in living tissues have the same left-handed twist. Only the left-handed adrenaline is a cardiac stimulant. In 1858, Pasteur discovered that the mold of penicillin glaucum, which is used to make blue cheeses, uses only the left-handed isomer of tartaric acid as its nutrient. Today, we know that the basic macromolecules of life are DNA, the genetic material, RNA, the messenger, proteins, the workhorses, and polysaccharides, the scaffolds. The components of these molecules, the sugars and amino acids, exist in two forms, that are the mirror images of one another. Pasteur was fascinated by the sharp conflict between the symmetry of non-life and the asymmetry of life. He believed that some sort of basic asymmetry in the Earth's environment was responsible for the left-handed bias of organic compounds, and he thought that if he could only discover how nature introduced this asymmetry into organic compounds, he would be close to the secret of life itself. He was closer than he thought. We know today that only asymmetry can beget asymmetry. Storage, transmission, and expression of genetic information maintain this asymmetry through the transfer from DNA to RNA to protein synthesis, to polypeptide chains. In 1852, Louis Pasteur travelled to Germany in search of tartaric acid crystals. He visited several factories and was well received wherever he went. He was charmed by the German spirit, but was flattered at the same time by the fact that the French language was the international language of science. He received an honorary doctorate from the University of Bonn. On his travels, he also met the eminent chemist Liebig, whose mechanism theory he was eventually to refute. Although today we know that neither Pasteur nor Liebig got it quite right, living organisms, as stated in the vitalism theory of Pasteur, are responsible for fermentation, but the fermentation itself is a chemical process and not, as Pasteur thought, biological. The first floor, the gallery. From here you look down onto the river, La Cuisance. This river was indispensable for the tannery. After his father's death, Louis Pasteur extended the house and raised its height. He affectionately called it his Château de la Cuisance. the entrance hall. The two charcoal drawings on the wall are works by Louis Pasteur. To the left, you see a bust called La Prière, the prayer, which he completed at the age of 21, copied from a sculpture by Jallet, which he had seen in the Louvre. To the right, you find a copy of a drawing by Giraudet, an illustration for the work Atala and René by Chateaubriand, which Pasteur drew at the age of 14. The academic's gown shows that Louis Pasteur was a member of three academies, the Academy of Science, the Academy of Medicine, without having been a medical doctor, and the Académie Française. On the wall, you will notice an ink drawing representing the house in Dole where Pasteur was born and where he spent the first 2.5 years of his life. Louis Pasteur's bedroom. Installing the bed in an alcove freed up space for Pasteur's study. A cleverly designed rail system made it easier for the servants to make the bed and to clean behind and under it. The corner cabinet shows Louis Pasteur's interest in hygiene products of the time, eau de Cologne, soap from Roger and Gallet, a toothbrush from Bon Marché, a department store in Paris, and to the left, a bottle of eau phénique, carbolic water, a disinfectant. Louis Pasteur decided that each bedroom should have its own washroom. In his way, he was a founder of modern hygiene. In 1880, he isolated Staphylococcus and Streptococcus and proved that they are responsible for infections. He also showed how these microorganisms move freely on the hands and instruments of medical doctors because of poor hygienic procedures. He officially demanded of medical doctors that they change their habits, even though he wasn't a doctor himself. The resulting polemic lasted for several years before wearing off after the creation of the rabies vaccine and the recognition that went with it. Pasteur had an excellent working relationship with Joseph Lister, an English surgeon, who sterilised his instruments and coat and the wounds of his patients with a phenol solution. Lister managed in 1869 to reduce post-operative mortality from 40 to 15%. He is regarded as the inventor of the antiseptic. In 1940, the Listeria bacterium was named after him. To the right of the door, you see two portraits. Above is Pasteur's father, Jean Joseph, who served in the Emperor's army before becoming a tanner, and below, Louis Pasteur as a young man. To the right of the bed, you find the medal of the French Légion d'Honneur and the commemorative St. Helen Medal, which belonged to Pasteur's father. The latter medal was awarded to soldiers having served in the last battles of the Empire under Napoleon III. Above the filing cabinet, you see the medals of the Légion d'Honneur and the Palme Académique awarded to Louis Pasteur for his scientific work. To the left and right of the mirror are two portraits of Pasteur's wife, made shortly after their wedding. The laboratory. In 1879, Louis Pasteur bought the house of his neighbour across the road and changed it into a laboratory. This laboratory was mainly destined to continue his research on wine fermentation. Having pleaded for the usefulness of such research for winemakers, Louis Pasteur received a grant from the Ministry of Agriculture. At that time, Pasteur's financial situation was much improved, thanks to his first national award, which had been voted by the National Assembly in 1874 for his work on silkworms, and to a subsequent second national remuneration, voted for his discovery of the vaccine against anthrax. The laboratory you are now in is the only laboratory of Pasteur's which has remained intact and which is open to the public. The concept is entirely Louis Pasteur's. For a laboratory of the 19th century, it is very well equipped. The gas is available at regular outlets to serve as lighting and also to feed the Bunsen burners. It also supplies the hot water tank in the small corner room. This warm room or incubation room allowed Pasteur to speed up the proliferation of the microorganisms he wanted to study. He had already shown that microbes grow much faster under warm and humid conditions. The sink has a water supply. Pasteur had his house connected to the town water, which was running under the Grande Rue from fountain to fountain. At the time, there was little pressure in the pipes and the water could not reach the first floor. To overcome this problem, Pasteur installed a hand pump, which you can see in the courtyard of the garden. The water is pumped up to the tank in the laboratory and descends by gravitation to the tap. Hoods over the workbenches serve to get rid of possible smoke or vapours. The microscope was invented in the 17th century by Antony van Leeuwenhoek, a Dutch naturalist. However, before Louis Pasteur, few scientists were interested in microbes or microorganisms. Because they are invisible to the naked eye, most people did not know they existed. It was generally thought at the time that microbes generated spontaneously. This meant that creatures could spring to life without a progenitor or parent. In earlier centuries, people had even thought that certain animals were created spontaneously. For example, mice were being created through the transformation of old flour bags. Frogs were fabricated from the vapour of swamps, and flies from rotten meat. People also thought that microbes were innocuous. Louis Pasteur showed that despite their diminutive size, they are at the origin of many of the phenomena we observe. He proved that they are responsible for the fermentation of wine, beer, vinegar, milk produce, and alcohols. Some of his samples of wine and beer are in the glass cabinet to the right of the door. Further, Pasteur showed that microorganisms are responsible for the transmission of disease, infections, and for the rotting of bodies. This germ theory has never been refuted. At first, Louis Pasteur collaborated with food specialists. His discoveries totally transformed this sector through reorganization, rationalization, and innovation, which continue to this day. Then he turned his interest to the field related to animal breeding and veterinary work and created his first vaccines. First, he created a vaccine against the chicken cholera in 1880, followed by the one against anthrax in 1881, and one against swine erysipelas in 1883. All these vaccines are presented in the cabinet between the two windows. He then improved the rabies vaccine in 1885. This is visible in a container in the glass cabinet to the left of the door. Pasteur developed a method which allowed him to reliably reproduce these vaccines. The very first vaccine, however, was discovered by another scientist. In the 18th century, an English doctor, Edward Jenner, found the vaccine against smallpox. He had observed that milkmaids who milked their cows every day never caught smallpox, but instead got infected with cowpox, a benign illness when touching the udders, ending up with blisters on their hands. Jenner inoculated the arm of James Phipps, a boy of 8, with the liquid gained from the blisters of the hand of Sarah Nelms, a milkmaid. The boy showed mild symptoms of an infection. Sometime later, and on several subsequent occasions, he was injected with substance from smallpox blisters, but he never caught the disease. The vaccination, also called variolization at the time, was used frequently, but Jenner, who had not understood the role played by the microorganisms, was never able to produce another vaccine. When Pasteur read the works of Jenner, he already knew of the importance of microorganisms. He knew that they are the cause of grave pathological incidents, and also that they are sensitive to their environment. When exposed to favourable conditions, they grow strong and virulent. When exposed to difficult conditions, they become weak. Louis Pasteur realised what Jenner had not seen. Smallpox and cowpox are two diseases caused by microorganisms that belong to the same family, the pox virus. But the first is more virulent and causes severe illness, while the second is weaker. Pasteur's hypothesis was therefore the following: by injecting a person with a weakened microbe, one could protect this person from the more virulent one. He therefore developed a method to isolate microorganisms responsible for specific diseases, to cultivate them in the laboratory, which meant growing them in a nutrient-rich environment, and then find a way to weaken them. The weakened microbes became then what Pasteur himself called the vaccine, alluding to the one identified by Jenner. Pasteur was also communicating with Robert Koch, originally a German medical doctor and surgeon, who redirected his interests to the study of microorganisms and who established four postulates to obtain disease-causing organisms in culture. First, the organism must always be present in every case of the disease. Secondly, the organism must be isolated from a host containing the disease and grown in pure culture. Thirdly, samples of the organism taken from a pure culture must cause the same disease when inoculated into a healthy, susceptible animal in the laboratory. And fourth, the organism must be isolated from the inoculated animal and must be identified as the same original organism first isolated from the originally diseased host. A collaborator of Koch was Paul Ehrlich, who discovered how to stain microorganisms to make them recognisable and identifiable under the microscope. Pasteur and Koch both announced the isolation of the anthrax bacterium. Koch then went on to isolate the bacterium causing tuberculosis, and when travelling in India, identified and isolated the cholera bacillus. Pasteur's first human guinea pigs were children. The first saved child, Joseph Meister, 9 years old, was from Alsace, and in 1885 he was therefore German. His rescue served as a patriotic symbol for France, smarting from the loss of Alsace and Lorraine. The French welcomed the vaccination against rabies. They already knew about the variolization, which is what the vaccination against smallpox was called. Napoleon III had his whole army vaccinated according to Jenner's method, as well as his only son, the King of Rome. As a result, some courageous French had themselves vaccinated as well. However, lots of people remained cautious because there were risks. Some vaccinations conducted under incorrect conditions provoked smallpox. When the French press reported Pasteur's new vaccination, the newspaper readers understood very quickly the particularity and the enormous advantage of the rabies vaccine. It could be administered after the contamination had occurred. One did not have to take a prior risk. After having been bitten by a rabid animal, there was enough time to travel to Paris and get treated. Since the vaccine could be administered after contamination, people bitten by a rabid animal now travelled to Paris, to Pasteur's laboratory in Rue d'Ulm, to be saved. Crowds were waiting outside every day. The vaccine had to be produced and administered, and beds had to be found for the patients for the duration of the treatment, which could last 2 weeks. Pasteur and his team were overwhelmed, and Louis Pasteur had to find a solution. He started and directed a subscription in collaboration with the Academy of Science. With the money collected, Pasteur founded the Pasteur Institute. From 1888 onwards, the Institute produced the rabies vaccine and the one against smallpox. The benefits received were put towards further research on other infectious diseases. In turn, Louis Pasteur's assistants at the Institute developed other vaccines. Émile Roux focused on the diphtheria serum. Calmette and Guérin developed BCG against tuberculosis. Alexander Yersin, a Swiss from Morges and founder of the Pasteur Institute of Nha Trang in Vietnam, isolated the plague bacillus and developed a vaccine against it. The institutes multiplied. Today we count 24 outside France. Their activity upholds the memory of Louis Pasteur's work. Louis Pasteur died in Garches, near Paris, in 1895, at the age of 73. He wished to be buried in the old cemetery in Arbois, next to his family. The state would have preferred the Pantheon. He finally found his place of rest in the crypt below the Pasteur Institute in Paris. The apartment and the crypt are open for visits. The output of Louis Pasteur was enormous and outstanding in several related fields, one field leading to another. Nature to him was an open book. He was not only a microbe hunter, but also a chemist and an applied scientist. There was a logical progression to his field of research, from pure chemistry to fermentation work to germ theory to immunology. Today, his genius is compared to that of Newton, Darwin, and Einstein. For future generations, an experiment that still works, the swan neck. Have a look in the glass cabinet to the left of the door. In his famous experiment, which was suggested to him by the chemist Antoine Ballard, Louis Pasteur made a flask with a swan neck in the form of an S. He put a nutrient-rich broth in the flask, which he called the infusion. He then boiled the infusion, killing any microorganisms that were already present. After that, he allowed the infusion to sit. Because of the shape of the flask, the infusion was exposed to air. However, dust particles and other things in the air never made it into the infusion because they were trapped in the curve of the swan neck flask. No matter how long Pasteur allowed the flask to sit, microorganisms never appeared in the infusion. However, if he tipped the flask and allowed the things trapped in the neck to get into the infusion, then the microorganisms began to appear in the infusion and multiply rapidly. This demonstrates that microorganisms do not appear as a result of spontaneous generation. Instead, they are introduced into food through dust particles and other things that happen to land on it. On the central table, you observe molds visible in the neck of the flask, which stem from droplets full of germs, which were placed there with a reconstitution in 2012. But the microorganisms contained in the droplets failed to travel to the interior of the flask to reach the broth. They got stuck in the bend. The broth in the flask is still uncontaminated. Proof of the fundamental principle we owe to Louis Pasteur, that nothing comes from nothing.